estate services, Lavazzi and Boob1.co.uk present the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast, episode 477. I'm Adam, and if we fight like animals or die like animals or whatever it's supposed to be, I don't know. And here's Kirsty Bissett.
Bad Catman.
And Debbie Melrose.
Good hunting, sister.
And Kirby Bartlett Sloan.
You're a public nuisance.
Maybe I should have said that. I should have said that before I said Kirby Bartlett Sloan. Robert Haynes.
Do you know any nice people? You know ordinary people, not power crazed nutters trying to take over the galaxy.
Mary Lang.
I will be free of it. I will be free of it.
What did we say about Kirby?
Yeah, there we go. We got some
news. Is my camera kit going on?
Master, I thought maybe you were playing that Empire March.
Dave
the
Prowse.
Imperial March because of Dave Prowse.
That's exactly why I'm playing it. Very subtle, Kirby. Well done. But I've managed to find a few more.
Those are words I didn't think I'd hear before.
Yeah, also, but I haven't got a sarcasm theme tune on here, but I've inherited a few, not special effects, but abilities since the last episode, of which are going to come in handy. Ooh. Like when I need to get away, like this one. Beam me up.
I'm going to also text Matthew.
I don't think Kirby realised we're actually doing the podcast at the moment. I'm not going to beam up.
Oh, he realises. He realised.
Yes, we're going to hear in tribute to Dave Prowse, hopefully if I remember play enough, the Darth Vader March, which will now be incorporated into my priority jingles. The Imperial March, then. I meant that. I mean, it's the Darth Vader thing.
How many stories of Doctor Who has he been in? Two or three?
I don't know. You should both know all this stuff. Ask Matthew.
He's just asking you so you can screw it up.
I will
find and he can tell you what the right
is. One, the Minotaur. But he
By the way, everybody, while he faffs, we are going to be reviewing Survival. Lillian Robbins says hi. Terry Miles says good afternoon, everybody. And Laurie Nick says, hello. Sounds like mass hysteria.
Ooh.
Yes. And Survival.
Oh, pets living together.
We're hoping that Matthew might join us just so we could have a gloat about his stardom.
The famous Matthew Kressel.
No, he was only in The Time Monster. Oh, well.
Well, Matthew Kressel. Yes, my God.
Wow, I thought he was a lot of a man.
Yes.
You learn a new thing every day, don't you? Right.
Oh, he's so much younger than that. Like my God.
I know.
Anyway, Survival begins with a puppet cat, which which accidentally...
Sometimes it looks okay.
Accidentally
like
looks
it.
Very creepy. I think it's supposed
Sooty
to.
Sooty is its name.
Yeah,
Sooty. Sooty, is it? This chap's cleaning his car, and normally when you clean a car,
it
starts raining. Yeah. But on this occasion,
Master?
How did I get in? He's not in it yet, Kirby. I think that's the end of the episode.
It's jumping ahead of
you. Unlike you, I'd love to move to the end of this episode, to be fair.
Do you know who that actor is who's cleaning the car?
Do I?
Yes, I do. I do, Kirby. Should I tell you?
Go on, Kirsty. Go on.
Kirby and
steal his thunder. Go on.
We saw him sitting as a clown holding a balloon in an 11th Doctor story.
Did we?
God complex.
The God complex, case, yes.
Did we? Okay.
The tension was building too much.
That was so underwhelming.
I remember the name of the story, sorry.
Too much of a...
Well, I knew
it. Can be close
so,
together.
You know.
Oh, my
God. Yeah, he was that creepy clown in the God complex.
Research, my God.
Do you know, I'm going to have to look back on this episode to see how much time has been wasted on this creepy clown.
I watched Blu-ray. Oh, do you have the Blu-ray? I've got the Blu-ray.
I've got the Blu-ray.
And do you realize it's going to be a entire season before I can start saying stuff about Blu-rays again?
Mary, why don't you have Blu-rays? Maybe you will go for a movie. I asked Mary, do you have the Blu-ray? Because I don't.
Nope, don't even have the regular DVD.
No, I mean the...
What? None of Mary watches it through somebody else's window.
I've got some breaking news. From Matthew.
Put the vision on.
He's coming on, is he?
He's not coming on.
And he says, yes, if I can get my Wi-Fi to start working again.
Oh, well, that's... wouldn't it have been better in a background scenario if you said he's ready? That bit really doesn't work too, does it? Yeah. How about just saying, Matthew's ready when I need... Not, he's trying to get on.
Yes, it does.
Right, I need to scratch my neck with my magic wand.
How come he answered Kirby and not me?
That's favouritism, that is.
Lauren X says that cat would later go on to star in Sabrina TV series. And Terry Marr says, hooray for the Blu-ray.
Yay.
How far are we in at the moment? So 8 minutes into the episode. 1 minute into the thing that she's supposed to be reviewing.
It's a three-parter too.
Yeah.
Three-parter, which means we'll take an hour.
And Kirby says, ooh, I missed the quiz. We're never going to get a chance to do any quiz on this.
I
missed the quiz. Never again.
The episodes would be if we had the quiz as well.
Yeah, well, yeah. If we be a bit slicker with this side of it, there might be a quiz. That's not going to happen, is it? Anyway, the Doctor and Ace arrive in TARDIS. And they sort of have a wander around Perivale. And
you notice they continued their trick of not facing the TARDIS in the nice
Ooh, because it looked rubbish. Anyway, so they're coming out the TARDIS. And Ace, who's been moaning about Perivale throughout the whole of her time, and Doctor Who seems to be sort of slightly pleased she's home. And then they cut to some kids playing in a park while this creepy cat watches them. And then the funny scene that made me laugh, even when I watched this and didn't know them. Did someone just exploded? Didn't know that the master was going to be in it.
Right. And Matthew says because he saw Kirby's message first.
But you said yours first.
Goodness, sounds like no one's really interested in a review on this particular story. The master turns up. It's not supposed to be the master. It's supposed to be disguised with a slight weirdo thing done to his voice and just the...
How would you not know that was him, seriously?
Well, you would have done, to be fair, wouldn't you?
Well, Fred didn't realise it was him.
No,
what?
I think
it had been a while since we'd seen
it. I did when I watched it. You know what that cat thing reminds me of? It looks like one of those, hidden cameras. So they mount a hidden camera in something that's supposed to look like an animal. Essentially what the cat was, he was the master's eyes.
Yeah.
Anyway, hang on,
the cat was creepy.
He was very creepy. Very good.
Good.
Right, so the Doctor and Ace go into this, I suppose, a youth club or a wrestling club. I don't know what it's doing. Where the
youth center to keep the raffle off the.
But actually, a martial arts center.
It's a martial arts center. Anyway.
Well, no, it's been torn down. It is now a.
At the time when they filmed there, it was a martial arts center. Moving on.
We could do that.
Why are we talking about it being torn down? It's quite clearly on the screen. What's she... You're on another planet, Kirby. Anyway.
And where are they filming if they tore it down?
So anyway, so there's some...
especially for Nora. The
when they made the Blu-ray, they went back and visited Perivale.
Hey, right.
Sorry, Mary.
But not when they filmed it, they didn't tear it down.
Mary's fallen off a chair, and I don't really blame her.
I didn't realize Perivale was a real town.
Yeah.
Well,
England's real too. It's a real place.
It's not make-believe.
Not all of Doctor Who is science fiction fantasy.
The Isle of Wight, not so much.
A lot of...
The Isle of Wight's a science fiction fantasy TV island.
A lot of places the Doctor has visited in England are not real.
Okay, anyway, back to Doctor Who. So there's some wrestling going on, and there's a bit of people acting tougher, especially the Scottish man who's looking after the other tries to sort of wind a couple of the kids into being a bit aggressive. There's some very subtle cat's posters on the wall in the notice board, and then the Doctor notices the creepy cat. Seems to know ahead of things that there's something not quite right about the cat. What?
Sylvester moved the cat poster so it was more prominent.
And also the graffiti on the boards there are actually supplied by the cast and crew. So if you see SA on the board, that's Sophie Aldred.
Oh, thank you. That's how it's done.
Well done, Kirsty.
Thank you.
Both have read the info text.
Yes.
Okay.
Kirby and Kirsty are like two kids.
That was a weird laugh.
Each other to get to the teacher, you know.
We're two halves of the same person, I guess.
Then there's a little poster saying local women still missing in the town. The Doctor and Ace decide to go to the local supermarket to get some cat food. Well, the Doctor wants some cat food because he wants to get hold of this cat. Hale and Pace happen to be in there running it. I know times are hard for comedians, but they've managed to get themselves. In fact, they do strike me as a gay couple running a shop in this particular scene.
I know someone posted.
We're all talking over each other. It's just like this show, isn't it? Carry on.
Go ahead.
You started.
Okay, fine.
I know that somebody posted a link to the comedy thing where they microwaved a cat, but I don't want to watch that.
Kirsty, have you got anything better to say?
That was most of their skits. They were mostly just seemed like a gay couple.
Yeah.
You know, there was one where they were always talking about concepts and stuff, and it's like they just don't. But I thought they were great. I liked them.
Yeah. I love Hayden Pace.
That's funny.
Yes, and it was a very
hello Johnny, hello everyone.
Stunt casting of the highest order.
And I think this is actually some of the best stunt casting in the Seventh Doctor era. Is this, because it's really kind of it's quite dark, the bit of comedy they're doing.
Yeah, that's why I said it was stunt casting of the highest order.
You know the cat
I cut you off.
Go on, Robert.
Kirby saying that one.
You know the cat that they find?
Yes.
You see the original cut of it? It looked pretty gruesome.
What do you mean, the dead one?
Had the cat angled to, they had the cat angled towards the camera, so you see all its guts and crap coming out.
But
the one that they showed in the show was facing away from the camera.
Oh.
In this case, I only watched the original broadcast version.
Anyway, back to Doctor Who. Debbie.
This was on the deleted and extended scene.
I didn't watch the deleted and extended.
Nor did I.
Well, that's not good enough, Debbie. Is it now?
That seems
to be a problem on your side.
Anyway,
watch it at any time because I've got the Blu-ray.
Well, why haven't you? Because you've had it for quite some time now. Anyway.
I've been busy.
Before Master gets angry, we should move on.
Hello, Matthew. What have you walked in on?
I was just asking myself the same question, Rob.
Guess what, Matthew? I'm actually trying to do a Doctor Who podcast at the moment. And I might ask Alicia to come back on. It's bloody sight easier in those days, I can tell you that. Right then. Anyway, back to Doc. Oh, have you got a quote, Matthew, before we move on to?
I do.
Oh, I'll do the introduction. Matthew Kressel.
Know what I reckon? UFOs.
And have you got a fee now you're a celebrity? I'm not going to pay you anything. Just wondered. Right then.
I don't know what you're saying.
Back from his triumphant performances at Chicago TARDIS.
Oh,
hey, you're a celebrity.
It's Matthew Kressel.
Get you out of there.
Yeah, you've got a high list of celebrity call numbers on your phone. Oh God. Pardon me. I was trying to stifle that. Well, anyway, back to Doctor Who. Now, before I move, try and move on, the scenes within the supermarket, I just found myself sort of getting engrossed in the products on the shelves and how they used to look in the late 80s.
Mm-hmm. Master?
Right. I did
the
same.
Jeez, I nearly pressed the start button.
Oh, God. What about all this, all that product placement? I thought the BBC wasn't supposed to do that.
Anyway.
Well, do you notice the Diet Coke that Ace has so outside?
Can tell you this.
What?
Go ahead, Kirsty.
I can do this a lot quicker.
What?
It's actually filmed in an actual grocery store, so that's why all the products were there. The only products that don't actually have real names are the products that they're looking at on the shelf, okay. Which is the cat food. And the Coke can outside moves because they can't actually show Coke, and all you see is the barcode, no matter which way the camera is facing. Anyway, we can move on.
Please.
And I had to explain to Fred what a price gun was.
How have we managed to stop this review of the last classic story in Doctor Who in a shop which has just got a little bit of stunt casting and the Doctor carrying a load of cat food? Why are we still here 10 minutes after I pressed the pause button?
Hey, I just saved you a good 5 minutes there on an explanation of what Kirby was about to say.
Thank you.
That's
suddenly
right.
Understand why somebody might have put a cat in a microwave.
Put something else in the microwave in a minute. Right there. Anyway, I'm going to move forward now because Kirby's held things up so long. The Doctor collects some cat food and there's a dead cat in the warehouse. And he then goes to another shop where Ace meets one of her friends with a weird beret and badges on it. And she's collecting money for hunt saboteurs.
Someone explain to me what that is.
They want to sabotage fox hunts. Fox hunting. They want to sabotage fox hunting. So as instead of chasing little cuddly, cute little orange dog-like animals across the countryside and getting dogs to tear them apart.
Cats, aren't they?
What are you mean about?
Foxes.
What are you about cats? Never mind. Anyway, that's basically.
Said they're like dog-like characters.
They're like dogs. Foxes.
you've like got cats. A fox in your garden, don't you?
I've got several foxes in the garden. They don't look like cats. They look like foxes. I mean, dogs. They're more dog-like than cat-like. Although their eyes are quite cat-like because they've got slitty eyes. Anyway, moving on. So the
I'm wondering if my Wi-Fi knew something when it didn't want to work 20 minutes ago.
Thank you,
yes.
Matthew.
Yes, Matthew.
I don't know, the greatest of days, and this isn't helping, to be fair. Anyway, and somebody else wearing an orange vest gets zapped away by what's going on. The Doctor leaves a little cat trap, which gets ruined by one of the neighbours, I think. And then Ace goes to a nearby park and finds a cat. Oh, what?
You know the dog that comes along?
Yes.
It's Pepsi. That's Pepsi. JNT's dog.
Yep.
Whose dog?
John Nathan Turner's.
JNT's. Thank you.
Yep.
Ace finds a cat, cuddles cat, and then a big cat on a horse turns up and chases her around this playground. And
what's with wolf howling?
Horse fowling, did you say?
Oh, the wolf howling when they
I was going to ask about that then, Debbie. That is a bit weird that the cats would howl like wolves. Would it not be a bit weird? I think it would be. But then it's a science fiction fantasy TV.
There's a note about it in the info text that, you know, cats yowl rather than howl, but apparently the director, Alan Waring, thought that these stock sound effects that had been brought to him to choose from sounded too much like a baby crying.
Oh.
And decided that they would use a howling sound effect, but it is, for anybody who has a cat, it is very disconcerting to hear.
Yes, it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
I wish they would overdub that. They should have done a special
edition. Laurie Nick says, heating up the tea. Sorry, Kirsty, didn't mean to interrupt you then.
But that's all right. No problem.
So the dog eats the cat food. That's the doctor's annoyance. And hang on, give me a slider stuck. And then, I think.
Are you watching the Blu-ray?
No, I'm just saying. Ace,
the DVD.
Ace gets transported to another planet. I feel like doing that myself.
Again,
Kansas,
where we find
Kansas anymore.
The dead body of the man who was doing
Dorothy
washing his bloody Nora, his car, and then
washing his bloody Nora.
And the Doctor
I did not see that episode of Last of the Summer Wine.
The Doctor gets grabbed by, just as he's about to grab the cat, he gets grabbed by the Scottish Army bloke, and then Ace is running around trying to get away from the woman on the horse. Then she meets one of her friends with a humongous nose. Can't remember her name. But she's got a very big nose. She's been in lots of stuff since
this. I didn't notice that.
Well, the woman with the nose. Huge nose.
She had a large nose.
Well, she had to stand about 2 feet away from Sophie to do the scene. Otherwise, her nose would have touched her.
That is me.
Oh, the horse.
She walked into the frame and her nose came in first, followed by the rest of her about 3 minutes later. It's almost like doing comedy on the podcast, isn't it? He's being mean. Well, it is really, but I'm feeling mean now because I've tried desperately hard to do a podcast here and I'm getting held up. It's like someone slamming the brakes on when you're trying to get somewhere nice. Right then, so where are we going? Oh yeah, so then we meet some of the other characters were Ace's friends, one of which I've met in Newcastle, the little chap with the wavy sort of boy band hairstyle. I met him in Newcastle. I've had my picture taken with him. And just saying. And then, of course,
you didn't meet the person that you keep insulting.
I might have met her, but I wouldn't know. But she has got quite a big nose. I've got quite a big belly. But I'm sure having a big nose and being quite pretty, that she is better than having a good big belly like I've got. Right then, the Doctor creeps up on the wall, tries to get the cat, and then, of course, gets caught by the army bloke again. And he gets transported to the planet, and then they get sort of rounded up by the cat people, and he gets sort of pushed into a little teepee, and the light shines on the bastard's face. And I must admit, he doesn't look very well. His skin's all horrible. Is there a reason for this, anybody?
Do you know why?
Anthony Ainley looks a bit...
The power of the planet.
What?
He's fighting off the power of the planets.
What? No, but his skin looks a bit...
Do you know why? Puffy. They actually froze the shot. They had to lock the shot off because for the eye effect, they wanted him dead still. So there's just his mouth was sort of like moving on.
Oh, no, that's fine. I'm talking about his actual skin looks puffy and he looks...
Yeah, well, it would have looked funny because of the way they did the shot.
No, but the whole of the story I'm talking about.
And they needed a lot of light on that shot to...
The whole of the story, yes, he does look a bit poorly, but I put that down to him fighting off the change.
Okay.
Yeah.
His skin looks like it's...
And wearing those...
Like he's had a reaction to something.
Maybe.
And it was exceedingly hot there, apparently, too. Was it? About up into the 90s.
Oh, it looks like that. I thought that was acting.
No, I mean, there's a reason why it looks like hot and dry on that planet is because it was hot and dry. The only way they got Sylvester McCoy to put the contacts in, he didn't want to do it. And he says, well, I'm already miserable. I might as well.
Anyway. And then there was the one cheetah person extra who was so hot that she stripped the costume off and left.
Oh.
Yeah, she just walked off the set with no shirt on.
Woohoo, I should have seen that. Anyway, Robert St. Vince Jr. says hi.
One of Sylvester McCoy's favorite anecdotes to tell at conventions.
I think he also tells it like 3 different times on this Blu-ray.
Yep.
We're not reviewing the bloody Blu-ray, we're reviewing the broadcast episode of this series.
Blu-ray? Oh, we've got the Blu-ray?
I've got the Blu-ray too.
Did you?
Anyway, Robert Vench Jr. says, hi all, welcome back, Robert Haynes. And then he says, I hope you will do a best and worst after your reviews. Best and worst of what? Presenters on this show? That'd be easy.
Classic era.
Sorry, Kirby.
Anyway, the cat's eating away at this sort of carcass, and Ace is getting friendly with her friends again, and the master has got a new suit.
I don't like his collar much.
No, I prefer it.
No, I don't either.
I think he should have worn his old suit unless it didn't fit him anymore.
He didn't want to. It was actually Anthony Ainley was one of the ones who requested new threads because it had been so long. I think, too, he's quite noticeably a little, less slim than he used to be.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to make earlier about the way he looked, about his skin. I think it's all to do with having put some weight on.
And got a bit older. Just said what I was about to say, so there.
Yeah, and it probably was a good idea because the original costume was kind of a velvety thing. And can you imagine wearing velvet in a 90 plus degree quarry?
Indeed.
Yeah, this is a lot of silk.
They were thinking that this was going to that there was going to be another season and this the master was going to be in it again. Nope.
Yeah. One of the fun things about the costume, too, if anybody noticed, the belt has a snake motif on it, which is interesting for when the master will finally reappear.
As a snake?
Oh, yeah.
Ooh.
Spoilers!
Ooh. Come on, ding, ding.
Oh, go on then. I think that's worth a ding. Well done, Matthew. Yeah. Right then, I did think when looking at these cat creatures, they did look a bit Ewok-ish, like tall Ewoks in some ways.
Oh Lord!
Anyway,
in Andrew Cartmell's book, he says several times that they were not sure that they would have another season. Mm. They were looking at this as a possible end game story.
Yeah. Okay. Of course, Robert Vince Jr. Does say it's best or worst stories. I don't know if we've got time to do that because Kirby's on this week.
We could do it next week to fill in time for Dimensions of Time.
I don't think we're going to need to fill in time with you on the show, Kirby. We could talk about me dropping. If I pick this bell up, right? I'll drop it on the floor. There he goes. Right. You could spend an hour talking about how, even though it took about less than a second. To leave my hand on the floor, you could spend a good hour talking about that bell hitting the floor, and I've just broke it.
Oh, you would the history of bicycle bells?
Hurry up and get to the point.
Don't kill yourself, Robert, please. Thank you. I'm trying to do a podcast here.
Not on the show.
James says, sorry I'm late. I was either dead or I've been to Birmingham.
Listening to this show is pretty much the same.
Good one.
It's not how it's supposed to be. Anyway, so the doctor throws some silver sort of beanbaggy things around to distract the cats and gets away on a horse, which is quite cool. And meanwhile, Ace and the pretty woman with the big nose set a little trap. And the doctor rescues the Scottish bloke who's just about to get killed. The other Scottish bloke, of course, because Sylvester is Scottish. And meanwhile, a milkman gets done in by a cat. The master spends a bit of time in his little teepee, sort of poking around it and sewing up costumes, and I don't know what he's doing. And then we see quite an interesting long shot of this. Well, it looks like a volcano, which is quite a good little special effect, actually. I don't want to know how it's done. Thank you, Kirby, before you start interrupting.
I wasn't going to, even though it is.
God. I've got an itchy back. I'm just going to scratch my back. I know Kirsty wants to say something.
That's it. It's all done with dry ice.
Right. So anyway, they try walking through this this valley thing with strategically placed skulls, animal skulls and stuff. And
poor local abattoir.
The Doctor and Ace seem to sort of meet up and get separated quite a lot in these sequences. And then there's a bit of a... They get cornered a little bit, and there's a little bit of a fight that goes on this sort of beach. And
I told you to stay still!
Yes, and then one of the cat creatures seems to be a bit injured and goes off to the lake. And looks like she's having a drink. But then... Pardon?
Lisa Bauman.
Yeah.
Kara.
She looks like she's... sort of died, or she's having a drink. I don't know. She gets grabbed by the scruff of the neck.
I thought she was having a drink, but
it looked like that. But then the way she was grabbed by Ace, it looked like she was sort of unconscious. But I just noticed the scruff of the neck did look a little bit like a costume. Oh yeah, of course it was, wasn't it?
And I don't think that was actually Lisa Bauman who did the actual face plant. But yeah,
that was
no,
good.
It wasn't.
It would have been her stunt double, yeah.
Yeah, but the opening of the eye and the flicking of the eye was really quite good. It did look like it was alive. It was really quite good. The master and the doctor have a couple of scenes together. It was quite cute. Kara and Ace sort of get acquainted a little bit, but she hasn't sort of revealed she's her sister yet. I presume when she says sister, does she mean friend sister or sister?
Friend sister, I think. Sister in battle.
Sister.
In the female sense of sister.
I thought that would be the case. Otherwise, she would have been a little bit more upset when she left. Like,
Kirstie,
my sister's been turned into a cat.
Kirstie and Mary, my sister's in podcast, you know.
Yeah. I forgot what I was saying now. Thanks, Deb. I've lost my train of thought. Oh, yeah.
Thanks, Deb.
Neil James says, can we have the Kirby jingle, please? Well, we've already done it. More than one. Which one? There's two now. Got we've got this one. And we've got this one. So.
Do that one.
We're going to get the request for which Kirby jingle you'd like to hear.
Oh, goodness. Answers on the back of a postcard.
Yeah. Well, the first one would be appropriate today because of a certain piece of news that dropped overnight, of course. So
we've already done that bit.
You missed the production meeting.
You've missed that bit, Matthew. Yeah, we've already covered that.
Okay, fair enough.
Already discussed.
Anyway, I'm moving forward a little bit because there's some very sort of dramatic scenes. Oh, yeah, the what's it? Who's the chap that became the master's sidekick?
Midge.
I can't remember his name there. Tall bloke.
Yeah, Midge.
Midge. I thought it was Midge. I didn't want to say Midge, but I felt it must be Midge.
Midge seems like a girl's name.
Yeah, Midge is a girl's name. But you know, now
Madge's a girl's name. Midge is not a girl's name. Madge.
Anyway, he goes all funny, and for an instant, he sort of he doesn't know anything. Which made me think, because he's got fully in control of the master, who puts a bit of a ropey thing around his neck, and he sort of hisses at them, and then they disappear, because the master's used him to get back to Earth. Yes?
You know, somebody speculated why, if you need this cheetah thing to go back home, why didn't the master do it himself, teleport himself then?
He didn't realize that he could.
Yeah. And also because he's very busy sitting there fighting it off. And probably it's the line that the doctor's going to have to Ace in the next episode, that you can change where you can do it, but if you do, you might not get back to being who you were. And certainly the way that the master is playing it throughout the next episode, that certainly seems to be his thinking. And the master would be much happier sacrificing somebody else than himself, potentially.
Thank you. Well, Neil James says, the one that ends for... I missed it because I moved the screen up. The one that ends for... ends go for a wee. I can't even read this morning, evening. I don't even know what time of day it is. Where are we?
It's tomorrow.
Anyway, he wants to hear this one. Yeah.
Kirby's trying his hardest to bore us. Time to make a habit. You know he's going to ignore us. Maybe you will go for a wee.
Poor Kirby. I'm feeling quite sorry for him now after people being mean to him. And Alan T. Butcher says, Midge was a boy mouth in Mary Mungo and Midge. Yeah. I liked Mary Mungo and Midge, Debbie. Do you remember Mary Mungo and Midge?
I remember Mary Mungo and Midge. Actually, I do.
I don't.
But you were 10 years younger than me. And
yes, but I had it. They repeated it. It was one of those really early morning TV shows.
Do you remember Mr. Ben? Do you remember Mr. Ben?
Oh, yeah.
I used to love it. Do you know, they should redo Mr. Ben as a live action thingy. The things they could do, they could transport Mr. Ben for long stories and all sorts of places.
And they've got to have the relationship properly done with the shopkeeper.
Yeah, I can imagine Stephen Fry playing the shopkeeper. Anyway, there's a great scene at the end of episode two when Ace sort of runs off in the direction of Kara, and then when she turns back and her eyes are yellow, she's got a very beautiful, sinister face on it. That's a really good cliffhanger. I liked that. Very atmospheric.
Yeah.
You lot are disagreeing. I don't blimmin' well care. It's my show.
No, not at all.
That scene is repeated at the beginning of episode three.
Trust me, if anyone disagrees with you, Adam, they jump right in. So when you hear quiet,
we usually disagree. Yeah.
So Ace goes off with Kara. The master arrives back, on Earth with his little friend. And Kara's trying to persuade Ace. I think Kara's trying to persuade Ace to sort of become catty. I thought women would, at that age, are pretty catty anyway, normally, so I don't know what the problem was. Neil James says, thanks. Sorry, Kirby. I'm grateful you read out my far too long reviews each week. Splendid fillers, all of you. As I say, nobody writes in feedback for this show that's too long, so thank you, Neil. Alan T. Butcher says, a Mr. Ben film was in development about 10 years ago. Ooh, they should have carried on. They could have put it on instead of having that... what's that thing they got on the BBC at the moment? His Dark Materials? Is that right?
His Dark Materials is brilliant.
Yes, I haven't seen it yet, but we do intend to watch it. Back to Doctor Who, anyway. So Ace gets a chance to ride the horse, but the Doctor turns up just when she's... She does say, where's the Doctor? So she's not completely turned over to the cat people. And... but the Doctor uses her cat abilities to tune into a little bit of what's going on. And also, they find a way to get back to Perivale. Pardon?
I said, good job she's not catatonic.
Ooh, Debbie. she was hoping for that opportunity, wasn't she?
Well
done. I'll take that.
Robert Vence Jr. says, I met Anthony at a convention in 1989. Very nice guy. Signed a picture for me. Oh, Anthony Ainley, I presume he's talking about.
Perfect joke, Debbie.
I tell you what, he is really funny, Midge. When he's being all catty and sort of his sort of voice and that is really quite amusing. And then we the Doctor and Ace go to this flat where there's a horrific dead cat that scares this little girl who used to be in Emmerdale, called Adele Silver, who's now 40 years old, with a child and as an actress who hasn't been in soap operas for a while. But that was her first appearance on telly.
You decided to say that instead of letting us interrupt and say that.
Yeah. What?
Yes, he did.
Well, it's probably because you've never seen Emmerdale, and I have.
Kirby, in retrospect.
How rude.
Yeah.
It's quite clever of him to actually, like, impart knowledge.
Yeah.
So anyway, the little girl who doesn't appear to have anybody looking after her is looked after, or Ace arranges for some care for her, which is quite good. I'm glad they put that in the script, otherwise I would have been wondering.
Yeah.
And then Midge sort of does a little bit of posturing against the people who used to bully him in the martial arts club. Scottish bloke turns
wearing
up
a ridiculous suit.
Yeah.
I think anybody else lent it to him. I was watching it last night, and for some reason, Midge's clothes made me think of Tom Cruise in Risky Business. I haven't seen it.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it. Anyway, there's a motorbike in the middle of a field that the Doctor admires. And we know somewhere along the line, there's going to be a motorbike scene, and then there's all hell breaks loose.
But there's a motorbike scene at the moment.
Yeah, the two bikes, Doctor riding one, and Midge. Is it Midge riding the other one?
Basically, yes, it's Midge.
Head
straight at each other, and you think, well, that's the end of them. But then they ruin the scene
a little bit because
the next time we see the Doctor, he's upside down in a pile of rubbish.
I think they were jousting.
They were jousting. Yeah. That's right.
With what though? They didn't have any.
They were joust what?
No weapons, we're just going for
joust,
it.
Just go.
Oh, and then
they should have left joust in Ready Player One instead of what they did use.
John Nathan Turner apparently went through the script and kept taking bits out that would have, bits out. Like there's the scene outside the pub in the first episode where Ace was supposed to have some lines saying, we used to try to get the older kids to buy us stuff. And John Nathan Turner's like, no, we don't want to give kids ideas.
And
apparently this moment was apparently one of them, because if I remember right from the info text, this was the moment they were indeed supposed to be jousting. And Jonathan, there's like, the kids will get ideas. Kids will get ideas. We can't do that. We can't do that. So you end up with a scene that doesn't really make a whole lot of sense.
We were doing wheelie chair jousting when I was in primary school.
We should play aggro bulldog in the playground, which is people running each other, trying to hit each other and stuff. Anyway, back to Doctor Who.
There's more of a game of chicken.
Adam?
Yes.
Around the era of the tango ads, when they started banning them as well.
Yeah, quite rightly so. You've been tango. That's the sort of thing they do on TikTok now, wouldn't it? Anyway,
tango ads where people slapped for flavour. This orange guy came running up.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, you've been tangoed.
Around the face. Trouble and is,
Somebody did it to Donald Trump and never stopped doing it, and that's why he's so orange.
That's his wife.
Right, anyway, so... That. Yeah, so the master stabs poor Kara to death with a thing that probably would penetrate the skin anyway, so he must have done a really good job of that. But I think it's supposed to look...
She's not really dead. She's going on to work in Big Finish.
She's getting yes. better.
But in the process of dying, she becomes a person again.
Yay!
And then the master and the doctor have a last little foofar, is it? Or battle. They get transported to the other planet, have a little bit of a wrestle. We've never really seen the master and the doctor have a wrestle before. They've had a sword fight.
No, never really
have. I almost quoted, if we fight like animals, we'll die like animals.
Yeah, that, I almost did too.
Excuse me. That's what I did, you right. Right, I'm going to bring this back for this episode, Kirby.
Well, you said it very quietly. I would
no,
have
I did
it's
not.
True.
Right,
it's
that's
true.
It.
It's true.
You said it that time. I heard it.
If you fight like animals, you die like animals.
Anyway.
Going on for the starboard bow, starboard bow. Starboard
yeah, so anyway, they have a bit of a fight, and the doctor.
Listen, that is dead, Jim.
The doctor transports himself back to. Earth, leaving the mask behind, and makes himself look a little bit silly because he's still saying, you know, if we fight like animals, we die like animals. And then this lady turns up asking
Jackie
him.
Jackie Tyler if, walks into the scene.
Is it Jackie yeah. Tyler? Looks a bit like her. Anyway, but she's saying, where's my blooming cat? And then Kara dies. Another woman on a horse turns up and rides around a bit, disappears. And then the doctor arrives, and he
yeah, that's
and
really explained why that one flashes it, flash of lightning, and then buggers off again.
Yeah,
because the original ending was that Ace was going to cremate Kara and sort of have a big funeral pyre, a la Return light. Of the Jedi. And at the end of Ghost Light. So again, you don't want to give people ideas, apparently. So they went for that ending instead, but it loses a lot of the power of it in the process, because then you just have Ace staring into an empty field, like, what is she looking at?
Yeah. Right. So and then
India, when they have their burials, you know how they burn people.
Yeah.
So is that encouraging all the Indian people to do that?
Yes, it is.
It doesn't, does it?
Yes, it is. Maybe it doesn't. I don't know. Anyway, Doctor Who.
I don't know, but I was...
Well, we don't have to worry about it influencing people because it's been cancelled.
Anyway, yeah, back to Doctor Who. It's going to take about half an hour just to get through the last 1 minute and 35 seconds of the story.
Well, you're going to have to play a certain
Jesus
quote.
Jesus Christ. Anyway, back to Doctor Who. Now, what did surprise me is that nobody used this.
Yes, the TARDIS. There are worlds out there where the sky's burning, where the seas asleep and the rivers dream. People made of smoke and cities made of song. Somewhere there's danger, somewhere there's injustice, and somewhere else the tea's getting cold. Come on, Ace. We've got work to do.
Yeah, so nobody used that one, Kirby.
Yes.
Well, it is slightly too long to use as a single line.
He's used longer ones than that.
And if he'd started saying it, Kirby would have taken over about a third of the way in.
No,
as you just played that, I turned and looked at the poster on my wall.
Oh, Kirby.
One, two, three.
Kirby has done longer quotes than that on this show.
I've got a little... The picture that I created several years ago that I used in the request for feedback.
Well, when we did the Three Doctors a few years ago now, Kirby's quote was the whole script.
Yeah. But I have a question. Yeah, can anybody tell me who wrote that?
Andrew Cartmell.
He did write. Indeed, he did.
You did that in harmony there.
Yeah, it was recorded on the Ghost Light set because they had figured out by that point they definitely didn't know when the script was commissioned, because Rona Monroe on the Blu-ray in the writer's room documentary expresses kind of a dismay that had she known she was going to be writing the last ever story, she'd have written something that would have perhaps been a more fitting endgame for it, for the whole show. And that as a result of that, and she was actually out of the country when they realized they needed to add something to the end of it. And it was actually Andrew who wrote it and was actually got Sylvester to record it in between shots on the Ghostlight set.
Uh-huh. And wasn't it good that it ended that they're facing away from the camera so they could just do that dialogue?
Yeah.
And yes. Know that it wasn't belong.
Perfect end.
Yes.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Sad.
Pardon? Yeah. Anyway.
It's sad, but it's hopeful at the same time. I mean, they could have ended it on a very funereal note, and instead it is sad, but it's got that slight bit of optimism to it that, you know, that the adventures are going to go on. We don't know when, we don't know where, which is...
And they did.
Yes.
Exactly. They're off to do stuff.
Oh, got a vibration.
In books and on audio and everything else.
Yes.
It was really, I know that it's an ending and everything, but it was in New Who that suddenly you got the long drawn out ending sequences.
You
really don't need them. Let the audience just go
with
more ambiguous endings would be really good. Mm-hmm. And then it'd be a full big finish.
Anyway. Yeah. Robert Venge Jr. says, Anthony said he wanted to play the Master Karma with a black suit. In this story, he played him the way he wanted to. Laurie Nix said, I keep heating up the tea. Get on and make it then.
You're supposed to drink it, dear.
Make me a cup of tea.
Right then. Survival. This is what I think of survival. It was okay. It's a bit of a sort of... a disappointing end to a rather good era of Doctor Who, an era that lasted...
Disappointing?
Yes, what? Unfortunately.
Did you say fighting?
No, he said disappointing, and I agreed with you, Adam.
Oh, thank you. It was okay. It was a sort of... Bear in mind, we've just had a story I thought was really good in The Curse of Fenric.
That was brilliant.
But of course, you get the feeling that they didn't really know it was going to end here. But in a way, also, I'm glad they didn't do a sort of big final. This is it, the end of the road for Doctor Who. They left the door open for it to continue. But it was okay. It was nice that you said about it being hot for filming because it did have that feel to it. And normally in Doctor Who, when they're trying to make it look hot, they just use funny lighting and then shoot it in January and like that. But in this one, it did look, you know, on the planet scenes really, really good. Again, the acting was fine. I love Sylvester now. Obviously, I didn't really like him much in his first series. Liked him a bit better in his second series. But he's really the Doctor in the third series. This is where I was so disappointed we didn't get really to see more. Obviously, on Big Finish, you can really encapsulate the Seventh Doctor a lot better, and the Sixth Doctor for that matter. But it's a shame. I'm glad it was only a three-parter in some ways, because I think it sort of needed to end when it did, to be fair. It was okay. What did you think about it, Kirsty?
I've always liked this story. It's one of those things where it's got a little bit of everything. There's you know, there's this mystery going on. You've got the, you know, the, especially in this season, the series, the developing relationship between Ace and the Doctor, and it, you know, I love Sophie in this too because she's quite strong and just, I don't know, she was actually new to horse riding, and if there's one shot actually of her sitting up on the horse, and they like commented on how perfect her like posture was on the horse, and it's just like she looks like she's always been on a horse. I like this as a story. It's just the same as all the others, though. I wish they'd had four episodes and more money, you know, because the whole process of these creatures hunting off world and it them being tied into the planet, I'm like, I like the whole idea of that. And and then, you know, it was kind of neat seeing the Master in the midst of being foiled by his own plans. Because normally at the end of the episode, you know, he gets trapped in whatever, or, you know, something explodes and we don't see what happens to him. But now we see him, he was obviously up to no good and got stuck here. And now he needs a doctor to get him out of there. And I think it's kind of a neat thing. There's no TARDIS and everything. It was a really nice idea, but it just didn't have the time or the money. And then, of course, there's interference from the BBC, and rightly so in a way, because having read the fact that you could write off letters and they have to do investigations into things, if people complain, yeah, somebody is going to write a letter saying, why did you do that? You made the policeman dangerous. Oh, well, we'll look into that. And they have to, yeah, spend money on it. So it's just like, it's easier to just go, no. We're not going to joust. We're not going to have Ace talk about getting drinks when she was, you know, 15. It's just not worth the hassle. It's not worth Mary Hart. It's not worth Mary Lighthouse. But yeah, I really like it. I love the end speech. It is. It's better than any. It does leave it on a just a kind of a nice even spot where they're off doing whatever they do. The listener, the viewer can choose really what they're off to do next. And funnily enough, we call it the wilderness years, but there was a ton of Doctor Who. And I think the end here did inspire, because it kind of left it open-ended like that, so many people to write. And, you know, that's where we get people like, you know, Russell T. Davies and coming back and doing the show, is because they were inspired by, you know, the end of this show and continued on. So, yeah, I think it's a really great story. It has its downfalls, but I love it.
Thank you, Kirsty, Kirby.
I really like this one. I don't understand why you were disappointed.
I didn't say I was disappointed. I said it's okay. A bit like Ben saying, what?
Well, like I said, I get wistful about this one because it is the end. And I, by the way, that
oh, but the moment was prepared for, apparently.
that last episode, this coming Sunday, will be 31 years.
Feels like this episode's been 31 years, Kirby.
I was waiting for that one.
You fell into that one, Kirby.
Yeah, you did.
I like this one a whole lot. The animatronic cat is disappointing.
I like the animatronic cat. It gives a sort of an alien quality to it.
Yeah, I thought the cat was brilliant.
Fred was sitting here with
cat's animatronics.
Fred was sitting here with me the other night, and she's going, ew, that's weird.
An alien cat, what do you want?
And I really like the character of Kara.
She was beautiful, wasn't she? A bit of a hooter on her. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's the other one, sorry.
And I've heard some people complain about the cheetah costumes. I like them.
Yeah.
And
the actresses didn't.
Yeah, not
Fred really liked it because, you know, she's into furry fandom, and so she knows lots of furries, and it's very much a very, very expensive furry costume.
Yes.
Actually, do you see anybody cosplaying with that character as a cheetah person? You don't, do you?
No, I never have.
No, I'm sure someone has.
I'm sure someone will.
Someone always does.
A secret furry in Doctor Who fandom probably has.
Yeah. And Terry Miles says,
I know, I'll go as a cheetah person.
Terry Miles says, Hale and Pace were brilliant but wasted in this story. Sorry, have you finished, Kirby?
Anyway, bit of trivia. The quarry in this case was the same quarry from Greatest Show in the Galaxy.
Greatest Show in the Galaxy.
You almost went Scottish on that one.
Quarry. Partly because it was the same director, Alan Waring. So I like it very much.
Thank you. Right, Debbie, what did you think?
Pretty much the same as you, really, Adam. I wish that Curse of Fenris had been the last one. I know, I'm such a Philistine. Basically, I spent most of this having to explain what was going on to my child. Normally I don't. Normally it's the other way around. And normally it's the other way around. But she found the whole cutting things and, well, why did that horse just appear and disappear? Why did that rider do that? And, you know, that sort of thing. It was a lot of the bittiness, the way it had been cut this time, just didn't seem to flow so well as a story, as a narrative. But I really loved Sophie in this, the way that she's dealing with the... the way she's dealing with the changes that's happening in her and her bonding with Kara, and Kara's my favourite in this as well, actually. And I totally get it as a story. I love how it's left open with their planet, the Master turning up. But I did feel almost like they were casting disrespect on the Doctor by having him bum up after the crash. I thought that was such an incongruous end, pardon the pun, for Doctor Who.
Yes, thank you for agreeing with me.
I just felt that was not in keeping, if you see what I mean, with the way the Dark Doctor has been going, you know, the Dark...
Yes, more the comedy, throwback to the comedy.
And
that was Sylvester's idea. He wanted that.
Because it just felt so out of place in how intense they were trying to make the episode and the story. And
they were intense, weren't they?
I'm full of...
thought they were TPs.
I love the use of the music. Absolutely love the use of the music. Again, that all throughout this whole season, it has been absolutely phenomenal. The use of the music has been brilliant.
It was good,
and
I agree. It was indeed very good in this story. Well done.
I just felt that it was good, but it wasn't as good as the others that we've watched this season. You know, it just didn't feel like a climax of an ending. It just sort of felt like we'll wander off quiet.
That's what she said.
Please don't wander off
quiet. Like the climax at the end.
I was just hoping that nobody was going to say that's what she said on that bit, so thanks for that, Kirby.
Well, you don't know us very well.
Oh, that's me, really. And Isla said I should probably dress up as one of the cheetah people at the next comic. But I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to do that. I think I'll just go with something different.
Yeah. My auntie Butcher said, I fed back. It's not short. Just so whoever gets this bit of feedback is pre-warned.
Oh,
right then. Who should we go for? Robert. What did you think?
Yes, I love it, actually. I think it's quite a good end because of the way, like, the planet is, feeding off the anger or whatever from the people on there when they fight. And, I thought it came up to a good... I'll have to say the word. It built up to a nice climax with the Doctor and the Master fighting against each other. And I just loved that they were, the Doctor's ready to brain the Master. A bit like he did in Tribe of Gum or Unearthly Child, whatever you'd like to call it. I love that it built up to that, and it seems it's like an epic sort of battle between them. As been mentioned about what Matthew said with the removing bits of it, it sort of makes some things like why are they going at each other on the motorbikes? For what? They're going to crash into each other, and what? It's a big explosion. What happened to them? Well. Mitch is all right. Well, he dies in the end, but...
he's getting better.
They're running out of time, so they're going to apply his melting skin and all this kind of thing, which it originally intended. But, as Debbie said, with the Doctor ending up in that pile of rubbish just upside down, was...
Hello.
Oh, that was quite a disappointing end.
Really,
Robert? Just kind of dropped off.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you could have at least wandered off into the distance and given us a speech.
Robert may not realize that he just stopped.
Robert, did you hit
me? He might still be going wherever he is.
Maybe he's having a coughing fit and he's put his mute button on.
And that's not going to happen, Neri. Come on.
Robert.
He comes back on doing that. Sorry, I had a coughing fit.
Well, just in case, well, we'll have to move on anyway, but if he comes back, we'll say, well, thank you, Robert. You did make some very good points. But shut up. No, not going to say that. Right, where do we get up to? Oh, yes. Matthew, what did you think?
Of the... Excuse me. Of the four stories of this season, this is the one that I seem to come back to the least in watching it again last night. I wonder why that is, because there's a lot in it that's actually quite good. There's the Planet of the Apes vibe to a lot of it, especially that playground chase in episode one. Kirby, I know you're a bit of a Planet of the Apes fan. Ace inside that geodesic climbing thing is a bit like the cage that Taylor's put in the first movie at one point. Yes. And, you know, while Sylvester is playing it a bit lighter, I think that the reason he's playing it lighter is because the story around it is so dramatic and so dark in many respects in terms of the thematic stuff that in some ways you need that kind of lightness to play off of. But it's an interesting story from a lot of points of view, particularly knowing where the show was going to go next, because watching it, it almost feels like a blueprint for the early RTD era of Doctor Who, because it's set, you've got a housing estate, you've got the extraordinary alongside the mundane, which is something that British sci-fi, but Doctor Who especially, seems to do a lot. And then you have somebody who looks an awful lot like Jackie Tyler kind of wandering in there at the very end.
Yes, yes.
To talk to the Doctor
for a moment. But there's, it's also thinking back, there's that scene in Silver Nemesis with the two skinheads where they're trying to, it's clearly meant to be this big pivotal social moment of social commentary and it just falls flat. And here there's that same kind of vibe going on and it feels a lot more real as a result of that. And again, the thematic stuff, and it's interesting, it's an interesting counterpoint to Ghostlight, which was the start of this whole Ace trilogy, because again, you have Ace coming home in a quite literal sense, and her growing up a bit and figuring out where she's going. And the fact that she doesn't have that big funeral pyre for Kara at the very end of it, I think kind of robs it a little bit of its dramatic power, as does some of the cuts that John Nathan Turner insisted upon on the way. As I was saying earlier, talking about going into that last speech, I'm really kind of glad that nobody knew until quite late in the day that this was going to be the last one. Because, as Kirstie said, the open-endingness of it left the door open for somebody else to come back and pick it up. And, it would happen a lot throughout the 90s with things like the Virgin New Adventures, Big Finish at the other end of the decade. But it ends it on a very kind of hopeful and optimistic note that this is not the end, but this is the end of the beginning, as it were. And I appreciate it for that.
Been prepared for.
Indeed. I think the Cheetah people are going to be they're the weak link in the production, and I think Rona Monroe and Andrew Cartmell talk about this in the writers' room documentary. Yeah. That they had originally intended everybody was going to be a bit like Midge and the Master, so that they'd have the contact lenses, they'd have the kind of long fingernail like claws, the teeth would come out a bit, and it was apparently John Nathan Turner who, again, interfering, went, no, it's Doctor Who. We've got to have proper monsters. Because apparently, despite having been producer for 9 years, he still hadn't figured out that if he insisted upon putting a monster in a story, it was probably going to be rubbish. Mm. In John Nathan Turner's kind of sort of defense, there's a story he tells in his memoirs that he got to see the original, him and Alan Waring got to see the original Cheetah People head. And apparently he said, as bad as what ended up on screen was, the original version was, and I believe I'm quoting his exact words, TARDIS at Pooh Corner. So it would have been apparently even more worse and even more cuddly. there's just a lot of good stuff here, I think. Dominic Glenn's music with that screaming electric guitar. Very, very much in the vein of things like Eric Clapton and Michael Kamen's score for Edge of Darkness just a few years before this. So much so, I actually, I'm going to apologize to Debbie. Debbie, while you were doing your feedback, I actually bought the MP3 version of the soundtrack off Amazon.
Why are you
Because I realized I didn't realize I actually don't own it for whatever reason. So I look forward to listening to it later.
It's just been so good over this whole season.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah.
And it's a very different thing from the kind of as good as some of the Radiophonic Workshop stuff was earlier in the decade. I think this season they were really hitting it out of the park music wise. You know, maybe this is back to the story itself, though. Maybe this story might be the weakest of the four this season, but it's like looking at the original Star Wars trilogy and going, which one of you is the weakest film? Because they're all really good in their own ways. Though I'm sure the Right Honorable Member Mary Lang will be vehemently disagreeing with me in just a moment.
I've noticed Robert's back. Robert, you're back. What happened? Did you cut us off or did we cut you off?
What's that?
Oh, by the way, listeners, if you can hear a rumble in the background, it's I've just turned the heater on for a sec. It's getting a bit nippy in here. Yes, you disappeared in the middle of your feedback.
Off the screen, saying a speech, you disappeared.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Oh. We didn't hear all of it.
We didn't hear your speech.
Okay. I'm losing my voice.
Bless him. We won't make you use it any more than you need to. Because... I'll play it properly. Because... Brace yourselves. It's Mary Lang.
Oh, well, for me, the whole thing felt like a fever dream. Nothing really made sense. It was, you know, things chopping back and forth. You know, to me, there was no smoothness to the story. And things and people just kind of come and go out of nowhere. And when it was over, I quickly forgot about it. So it's all like a fever dream. What I've noticed is that nobody ever talks about survival. Nobody reviews it, good or bad, in conventions. Nobody talks about it. And I've always wondered why, and I'd never seen it. So this was my first time seeing it. Other things I've seen in Doctor Who, because I hear people talk about them and I want to find out what they're talking about. But like I said, nobody talks about it. Nobody references it except that final quote. So for me, it was a brand new experience to watch survival. And I was not terribly impressed. And you know, now that I read all the stuff that went into it in terms of things that were changed, Cartmell's disappointment in how things were portrayed, including the cheetah people costumes, what he had in mind was something more like Mags in Greatest Show in the Galaxy, where
that's right.
Animal-like, she was mostly human, and that's what he thought it would be. But yeah, like, I think it was Matthew who said, you know, John Nathan Turner stepped in and said, no, we need full-on monster costumes. And so what they ended up, you know, were these little Ewoky, cute little, bear-like people. It was hard to buy into them being
wolves.
And while I'm watching it, I'm thinking, you know, this could be a much better story if the master weren't a part of it. To me, it felt like he was kind of shoehorned in, and imagine my
because
surprise.
He was.
Yeah, when I read about it later, that he was shoehorned in. He was not a necessary part of this story. I think it would have been more interesting without him, because I think just that idea of the cheetah people and what are the little cats are called. Tiggers or something. That alone, I think, would have been, you know, an interesting concept to pursue without sticking him in all of these scenes. I think it would have been better without him. And the thing that bothered me the most was that scene of Ace running from the cheetah girl. I mean, she was running all over this playground. I mean, she could have just run away, but she keeps running up to one structure after another, you know, climbing up or going inside or all this time wasting when she could have just run away. And I would have bought that. But this just seemed like crazy time wasting, you know, let's, I don't know what the thing. Once she got inside that little cagey thing, you know, that was okay. But why did she
go? I know, she could have stayed there.
Yeah, why would she go up and down a slide? Why would she go on a swing set? Why would she do all that?
Because it's great visuals, Mary.
Yeah, see, that's what I was afraid of. It's just
improvised on while they were there.
It's camera candy. It's not really contributing anything to the story. So it was a time waster.
But would you be thinking straight if you were just happened to be sitting on a swing and all of a sudden a cat on a horse appeared and started chasing you?
Well, I'd run into the woods.
But would you if a cat on a horse started chasing you?
This is why Mary would be the first victim in a horror movie. Just saying. Yeah. She would run straight into the woods.
Straight into the woods. The other creatures.
No, when she was climbing up the slide, I'm thinking, well, that just puts you at the level of the cheetah person, and they're going to get you all the easier.
Hey, Mary. Mary, you know what?
They're going to get off the horse to come get you.
Mary.
Go on all the appliances.
Science fiction fantasy show.
Mary. 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 Yes. No, do you know what I'd do? If I was the cat on the horse, I'd jump off the horse and eat the horse. There'd be quite a lot of
meat there, to be honest.
Yeah.
But anyway, I think that wasted a lot of time. And I think the master was a wasted thing. But, you know, so the whole thing struck me kind of like it did Adam. You know, it was okay. And I can understand now why nobody talks about it. It's not that, you know, wonderful of a story, or at least it was not wonderfully done. You know, the story in its original conception was probably very good, but I think that it basically got ruined.
Thank you, Mary. We're talking about this as the end, and obviously them wandering off into the distance, arm in arm, discussing the future. And of course, there is a future because Dimensions in Time is coming up very soon.
Oh, goody.
In the word, to paraphrase Tiny Tim, God help us.
Now, come on, Matthew. Enough of that.
That's what we're doing next, then, yeah?
Yes. No, what we're doing next was listening to Andrew Cartmell's thoughts on survival.
Oh, I have a big smile on my face about survival. There's some very dodgy animatronic cats.
Yes.
And the reason that happened is because, well, first of all, Rona and I wrote a script which involved cats, which is always a dangerous thing to do because cats are not trainable in the same way that dogs are. Mm. However, John was convinced by somebody in the effects department that they could do an animatronic cat because there'd been a recent television program with quite a successful robot dog. It's not a robot, it's an animatronic thing. It's a thing that you animate through rods and maybe through pumping air. Anyway, so it's a special effects dog and it had been quite well achieved. The problem is cats are way smaller, so you can't get all the mechanism inside them. Mm. So the animatronic cat was a bad idea from the off. It just looked terrible, it didn't work. So when I think about survival, sometimes those things do flash into my mind, but mostly what flashes into my mind is what a resonant poetic wonderful script Rona Monroe wrote. Rona was a big Doctor Who fan when she was a kid, but then later on she was a Star Trek fan. So she, like Ben, she came from the right sort of background to do good science fiction as well as being a terrific writer, just screenwriter and playwright in her own right. And so Rona was one of the finest writers to work on the show because she was just such a natural for it. And I can't tell you how pleased I was that Stephen Moffat brought her back and hired her to write for the new show.
Oh, good.
Yes.
Yeah, I remember she did. Yeah, I remember that.
Survival's a really outstanding one, and I'm very, very proud of it.
There you go. He likes it.
Okay.
We do have really one little swan song from Andrew, which I'll play later in the show, because it's time for feedback.
I didn't know he was a singer.
It's Kirby's.
More accurately, I didn't know he was musical.
Thank you for that. Kirby has now got his little bit. Feedback.
That's what she said.
Oh, for God's sake.
Good times. Good
times. Are you ready, Kirby?
Yes, Robert Haynes responds, going to be sad reviewing this one for me anyway. Alan T. Butcher says, because of Hale and Pace? And then Robert says, last of the classes era. I think he meant classic.
The classes era? Oh, dear.
Classes era?
That's what's written. Thomas Cookson says the Five Doctors would have been a better endpoint. Alan T. Butcher says, but we'd have missed out on Warriors of the Deep.
Oh, well, stop choking to death, everyone. For God's sake. Trying to do a podcast here.
Robert Wins Jr. says, I understood they added the ending when they found out they weren't back next season. Where's this picture of... He says, so it's come down to this. Who is this?
That looks like Hamill, Mark Hamill to me.
There's been a series of commercials with him and Patrick Stewart.
Oh.
Doing, I can't think of what it is. They're one of the food delivery companies.
Something. It's a delivery company.
Is it Uber Eats or something like that?
Yes. Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. I just don't remember that particular scene.
I'm useful sometimes.
Somebody named Matthew Kressel has a link to the Hale and Pace microwave cast.
Brilliant one, Matt, Robert. That was superb. Who's that?
Robert Wins Jr., watching Survival, reminded me of the movie I liked called Cat People. It focuses on a family that could change into big black cats, a variation on the werewolf movies. And he has a picture of the more recent Cat People. There was also a 50s Cat People, which is actually better.
I like the 50s version.
In my opinion, the 50s one's better.
I like it's 40s, isn't it? Like 1942 or something?
Is it?
Yeah.
Isn't the modern version got
the older one?
Got Bowie on the soundtrack?
Yes, that's true.
Robert Wiss Jr. says, okay, everyone say catnip, and he's got his publicity shot of all the cheetah people with Sylvester.
Nah. Oh.
Okay, Robert Wiss Jr., my review of Survival, or what I would call it, Doctor Who and the Planet of the Cat People. It's sad that this is the last of the classic era stories. This is the third part of Ace's storyline. The Doctor and Ace go back to her old hometown, find out what happened to her mates. Turns out people are disappearing, and it involves the Master. There's also a portal between the Earth and the Cat Planet. You want to say something, Robert?
No, you said the Master. I went,
huh? Oh, okay. That's the sort of thing I would do, except I would...
I am the Master.
You know what it's like, Kirby.
Ace is also feeling the effects. The Master wants the Doctor's help to leave the planet before it blows up. In the end, the Doctor and the Master battle it out. The Doctor makes it back, no worse for wear, reminded me of the Planet of the Apes movies with the horse riding. Sergeant in the story is a bully. It was lucky he lived, thanks to the Doctor. The funny part was the what kind of cat food discussion with the two in the shop, plus forgetting to pay. Yeah, that was funny. The black cat at times looked fake.
It is.
And the portal effects could have been better. A very average story. My rating 3 out of 5. Until next time, come on, Ace. We got work to do.
Well, yes. Right, steady on, Deb.
I just noticed the picture he attached to his comet is actually the cover for the soundtrack.
Ah.
Ooh.
Ooh.
It's a nice bit of artwork.
I just bought the soundtrack.
Nice bit of product placement as well.
Did you know you bought the soundtrack? Anyway.
Surprisingly, not available on the Blu-ray. Incidentally, for our U.S. listeners, the Blu-ray for this season is apparently part of the Amazon Cyber Monday deals at the moment.
Oh, darn. Ooh. Except I needed it for these podcasts. So.
Right.
Wish I had a job.
I do love the trailer for the Blu-ray set.
Yes.
Yes.
So great.
Brilliant.
Okay, Neil James. Survival. In some ways, the opening part of this story is just as odd as Ghostlight. The doc spends the whole episode trying to catch stray cats, whilst Ace searches for her mysteriously missing friends. Maybe they've gone to Birmingham. It's so weird, and I love it. The deserted streets and park are eerily atmospheric and work well to evoke a boring British Sunday. Maybe they were in lockdown? It really reminds me of the excellent opening part to Invasion of the Dinosaurs. The casting of Hale and Pace for just one scene as shopkeepers was a very strange decision, but it doesn't bother me. I'd be very interested to know what non-Brits make of them. As for the cat, I'm just not sure. The mistake was to switch from real to fake. If they'd picked one option and stuck with it, I'd have been happier. Anthony Ainley returns with a new outfit. I don't like it. And delivers a very subdued performance. Gone is the pantomime, laughing, and booming voice. This is a much more sinister master.
Yes.
Yes.
I quite like it.
Yes.
Yes. Elsewhere, Midge gets a terrible suit and does some terrible acting.
Yeah.
Boy does his wonderful clowning, and there's a bizarrely non-lethal motorbike crash. It's interesting.
Well, not for Midge.
It's interesting that the action returns to Perivale for the finale, but I wouldn't change it because it gives us one of the most hilarious scenes in Who history, the angry cat lady. This episode,
a.k.a. Jackie Tyler.
Yes. This episode is the last of a series that has run for 3 decades, and they ended it with a random woman we've never seen before moaning about cats. She even gets the catchphrase, "So you say." Absolutely nuts. But I love her, and I think she's pretty sexy, too. The final voiceover and music is gorgeous, sad, and perfect. This is not as strong as the rest of the season, but it's still really good. How could they cancel after the quality of 26? Madness!
Yeah.
Hear, hear.
Four stars out of 5.
She does really have a nice bum in those jeans.
Rocky,
I'm just saying. If I could pull that off,
Yeah, steady on, Kirsty.
That's what I said.
Robert Wins Jr., I agree. But the bigwigs wanted to get rid of Doctor Who, and they got their wish. At least McCoy lasted longer than Colin Baker did. He also says, I wish Ace was in this TV movie as the companion.
Yeah.
She would have been a nice bridge to the new series and would have worked well with Grace.
Yeah.
Yeah, she could have.
There was apparently, I mean, we can talk more about that when we get to the TV movie. There was a very briefly some talk of that, but of course, the BBC and Fox both had a lot of input into the TV movie, and at one point, the doctor that McGann was going to regenerate from wasn't going to be Sylvester McCoy at all. So be thankful that we got Sylvester McCoy in the TV movie is all I'm going to say for the moment.
Yes. Doesn't that make him the longest lasting doctor?
Serving doctor.
Serving doctor.
Yeah, I think him and McGann, just by virtue of that, I think technically are the two longest serving. I don't know. Whoever's got the lead doesn't have it by very much, if we're being technical about it.
And if I can
we have to be pedantic about it.
If I can say that I was reading about what was going on at the BBC at the time, and what I read is that Doctor Who in particular was not being singled out to stop. They were making a decision at the time that they did not want to do any more in-house productions. They wanted to switch to all, you know, bringing in programs that were produced elsewhere because it would be a lot cheaper to do that. And so that led to a lot of small companies, you know, arising out of nowhere, making things that then were being submitted for purchase to the BBC.
Yeah.
So Doctor Who just was one more thing that they stopped producing.
It offload.
Yeah. Well, it was the year afterwards is, of course, when Parliament passed the Broadcasting Act of 1990, which mandated that I think it's 25% of all BBC programming had to be produced by outside of the corporation. And Doctor Who was just one of the casualties of that.
Yeah. And eventually they shut down Television Center.
Yeah.
Well, it's open again now. Anyway, right.
Yeah, but not for
not for the BBC.
Well, BBC make programs there.
Also, why Doctor Who is being produced in Wales?
Yes. Yes.
Because they don't have the ability to produce in house. Otherwise, they're buying it from or renting it or whatever they're doing. They're getting it from BBC Wales, which is a different production company.
Yes.
Anyway, Neil James.
BBC Kind.
Neil James says, watching Survival, the TV movie and Rose in Order is really interesting. They are wildly different, but so much of Survival in the movie clearly influenced the 2005 reboot. Yep. The bigger console room, the teenage London girl companion, and that crazy cat lady is certainly a Jackie Tyler prototype.
Thank you.
Yes, I will skip...
skip that bit. And then you got Neil James' rankings.
Neil James has a ranking, my seventh Doctor rankings. Number one, Curse of Fenric. Number two, Ghostlight. Number three, Remembrance of the Daleks. Number four, Battlefield. Number five, Survival. Six, Delta and the Bannerman. Seven, Silver Nemesis. Eight, Paradise Towers. Nine, Happiness Patrol. No, it's Happiness Patrol. 10, Dragonfire. 11, Greatest Show in the Galaxy. 12, Time in the Rani.
I'd switch around Greatest Show in Time in the Rani. Right then. Okay.
No.
Greatest Show in the Galaxy.
And by the way, I do suggest, if we're talking about dimensions in time, that we also do the rank thing again. Because we did the rank before we started the journey. So we should do the rank after. Because I know my ranking for all of Doctor Who has changed.
I can't do a ranking for every single story from start.
Really?
That's 140.
No. We did our top fives or something per era.
Did we?
Let's just applaud ourselves, pat ourselves on the back, and move on.
I'll find the note.
Yeah.
Well done.
Yeah.
Great.
Good. I'll find the note and tell you what we did.
It's been 3 years of my life.
Yeah. Anyway, where do we get up to? Okay, we're doing some feedback.
I just came in for the end.
That's what she said.
Yeah, I've just kind of wandered in and out.
You've dabbled, Matthew. Anyway, in fact,
well, I have had a lot going on.
Oh, here we go.
Some weekends it's more in than out.
Hey. In fact, Sophie Aldra has been on the show more often than Matthew, to be fair. Right then. We've got this.
I don't think that's quite true, Adam.
I still can't bring myself to listen to that episode.
Hello, 20 Megabyte Podcast is in Kirk.
Hello, Ian.
Hello, Captain.
Survival by Rona Monroe. Rather ironic that the final story of the classic series is called Survival. Ace is menaced by leopard people. They can't change their spots, you know, even if they're cheaters. The kidnapped young people of Perivale must battle for their lives on a planet where only the fittest survive. This is foreshadowed by the Territorial Army Sergeant and the joke about the lion. The two men working in the shop are played by comedy duo Hale and Pace. John Nathan Turner was stunt casting to the last.
Yep.
Doctor Who featured a robot dog in several stories. Here, the production crew used a robot cat. Viewers of the original broadcast might not have realised the master was involved until the end of episode 1, when they let the cat out of the bag.
Oh,
oh well, at least Judi Dench was not in it. When it was realised that this story would be the last to be broadcast, a voiceover was added to the end. Somewhere, the tea is getting cold. That reminds me. I feel the sergeant is the sort of person who would not like the TV show and would claim that the BBC should concentrate on nature documentaries and stuff written in the 18th century, and teach young people some respect for their betters. He gets murdered at the end. The BBC is paid for by a compulsory licence, paid by all in the UK who watch TV. most feel that they should entertain those who are forced to pay for the BBC. I don't think it is too far off the mark to speculate that there are many in BBC drama who plotted to do away with Doctor Who. They would have felt that the money would be better spent on Jane Austen and Chekhov. Not that Chekhov. 2020 continues. Darth Vader has died.
Aww.
Well, he never sounded too healthy. Coming soon on the 20 Megabyte podcast, Dimensions in Time.
Hey. Oh my god, yes.
Bye for now.
Yes, well, thank you, Ian.
That was great.
Right, we have further feedback. Let's flip a coin. I think we have Debbie on heads and Mary on tails. Alexa, flip a coin.
You got heads.
Debbie.
Sorry. I just can't get over Alexa. I think she's wonderful.
Mine also said heads.
Marvelous.
I like how you can whisper to her and she'll whisper back.
Yeah, I do that when I say good, when I tell her to stop at night time because it's like 1 or 2 in the morning. I'm there going, Alexa,
oi. She, you're right next to her. She will speak. Stop it.
It's vengeance for the Siri moments.
Come on.
Alexa, what is the airspeed velocity of an unladen swallow?
Debbie, get on with it. Debbie.
Yeah, hang on. I'm using my very
we're
old...
We're buying time for Debbie.
No, I've got my crooked iPad because Ida was using the other one. Cheers, Kirby. After your repeated mentioning of Dimensions in Time last week, we watched it. We then realised it should be survival, so here is our feedback on this week's one. Survival, well, the hated BBC decided that as they disliked SF and Doctor Who so much, they cancelled it after this one. This is the last time we will see Ace and the second to last time for Doctor Seven in a real Doctor Who story. Due to the BBC giving them a very small budget, the animatronic cat was worse than Salem in Sabrina the Teenage Witch. He was rubbish. Yes. The cheetah people were a great idea. I'm sure the horses wouldn't have let big cats ride on them. Their makeup on Cara was very good. As she said on the extras, very hot to wear. Great to see a young Benny, sorry, Lisa Bowman, as Cara, who became Bernice Summerfield in later Doctor Seven adventure books and her own range of books. Mm. I know J&T had to have stunt casting, but Hale and Pace? No.
Yes.
Once again...
You're okay.
The Master wants to destroy everything. No wonder the Daleks killed him in the movie.
Yes.
He makes Daleks seem like little kittens compared to him. See what I did there? There was some great acting from Sophie and Sylvester. As we have watched the next one already, thanks again, Kirby, we are now looking forward to the TV movie. Stay safe, everybody. Linda and Terry Miles. P.S. Well done to the Isle of Wight for being one of the two areas in England in Tier 1. Here in southeast London, we expect to be in Tier 3 very soon, just in time for Christmas.
That's because those grim people up north can't be bothered to stick to the guidelines, like when they win league titles in Liverpool. What do? They go around and cuddle each other and celebrate. But to Liverpool's credit, they have managed to reel it in a little bit over the last few weeks.
So I just assumed
it was... sorry, Mary.
What are those tiers? What do they represent?
Well, Tier 1 is the softest of the restrictions.
We can meet inside in our bubbles. Tier 2, you can meet outside in your bubbles. And Tier 3, which majority of the UK is actually in, means you can't meet anyone.
No, it is full, almost like a full lockdown, isn't it, elsewhere? Mm-hmm. But we can, our businesses can open as normal to a degree, as long as they stick to social distancing and stuff like that. Right.
The company that I work for is anticipating issues because of people spending Thanksgiving together. So I'm working from home for the next month.
Okay.
Oh, good for you.
It'll all end in tears.
I'll say that Terry does say about this last time we see Sophie as Ace, it isn't, because of course Dimensions in Time is coming up.
Yes.
Yeah, right. Matthew was going to say something.
Matthew, you were going to say something.
I was just going to make a joke that I thought the reason the Isle of Wight was in Tier 1 was because you were all doing ritual sacrifices to the Wicker Man.
Oh, yeah, I posted that.
That sounds more likely. One, yeah.
Right then, Mary. Over to you.
Not the Summer Isle, after all.
Yeah, when Alan said it was overly long, he was on the nose. So,
over to me. I don't mind doing a chapter or two if you need it.
No, she's digested it now.
Chapter or two.
Yeah, we this isn't chapters here. Okay. So from Alan.
Big breath, Mary. Big breath.
From the pen of Alan T. Butcher, Planet of the Thatcherites or Catapolism in Tooth and Claw.
Very good.
Survival is, of course, a closely studied Marxist critique of Thatcherism and the way it supplanted traditional conservatism with a more individualized, wayward, and destructive form of capitalism. The anthropomorphic cheetahs and their planet form a representation of this type of capitalism, capable of great spurts of acceleration, but notoriously lacking stamina and susceptible, therefore, to regular busts between the booms. The more activity these cheetah people manage, the greater the destabilization of the planet overall. This is described by capitalists as creative destruction and is supposed to lead to economic adjustments and better businesses. In fact, of course, it is poverty and misery inflicted on those with the least means to sustain themselves. The shopkeepers are there mainly to deliver the joke about the lion and the running shoes, and one only having to outrun the other to survive, which serves to summarize the mindset of capitalism in general, especially as emphasized under Mrs. Thatcher. The doctor's observation about a second lion turning up elucidates the fundamental flaw in that thinking. Sergeant Patterson is a traditional conservative running his own attempt to indoctrinate a group of young people at the youth club and is a passenger through much of the story until he is supplanted by Midge, who is by then a full-on representation of Thatcherism, styled as a late 1980s business yuppie, spouting total individualism and a devil-take-the-hindmost attitude to his fellow human beings. Midge is cast aside too, however, his death presciently showing what would be the fate of many such true believers, and most spectacularly in the person of Nick Leeson, who single-handedly brought down London's oldest trading bank by the culturally endorsed tendency for cheating the system, in parentheses, a homophonous double meaning of cheetahs, obviously. The master seems to reflect the effect on government as a wider concept, more able to resist the effects in some ways, but not completely, nor forever. He finds he can avoid danger to some extent by exploiting individuals, though he still succumbs to change eventually. The others determine with the doctor's help that their only way to get to safety is by working together to exploit the system. The Marxist analysis that this activity would inevitably lead to its own destruction is, of course, comforting and reflected in the planet's understood fate. However, although Thatcherism did eventually explode itself, the consolation may be questioned, given the long-term damage and some perverse mainstream attitudes that persist to this day. It should be noted that whilst some suggest that this was not a fitting end to Doctor Who after decades of production, in fact, it was correctly not an end, as Doctor Who didn't end and shouldn't ever end. We also learn that the cheetah person Kara did in fact survive and reemerged after her recovery as Bernice Summerfield and came to know her much better after that, and particularly knew Jago and Lightfoot well under the further pseudonym Ellie Higson.
Yes.
All in all, survival is better than you might imagine on paper. In a fairly straightforward story, a lot is said at a reasonably profound level. McCoy probably joins Davison in achieving his most assured and consistent performance in his last broadcast story, and it is a tragedy he was not allowed to continue. Ace's growth as a character is rounded off well with another story in which she is at the center of things, and again, the original plan for her to find a place to stay during the next season was one that would have been worth seeing. The quality of the supporting cast is not a feature here, but they are adequate to the job, and Anthony Ainley surpasses himself by proving he could accomplish a performance much more subtle and closer to Delgado than might have previously been thought. This story is 15 seasons too short, since in spite of some production errors and inadequacies in recent times, the potential and flashes of greatness that the show is capable of prove that it should have continued. Next up, Doctor Who and the inaccurate predictions about EastEnders, or let's try to persuade the public it was right that Doctor Who was ended. Those are my thoughts.
Yay!
Can I mention something?
Can you mention something, Robert? I normally say no, but you do it anyway, so on this occasion I'm going to say yes and see what happens.
Thanks. And I was just going to make... I was reading the discontinuity guide about this, and it was just saying it was a nice sort of rounding out thing that the show started in contemporary London and actually finished in contemporary London. That was a nice point.
But like Alan said, it didn't finish. It continued.
It started with the assassination of John F. Kennedy and ended at the fall of the Berlin Wall.
Right, stuff coming through on the feed. Laurie Nick says, camera candy. Well, thank you, Laurie. I'll take that. What? Thank you very much. Alan T. Butcher said, if they'd only had a laser pointer, they'd have been fine. And then Tim Drury. Oh, for God's sake, this bloody thing. Play from the start. Says, a great story. Used to be among my favourites, but sadly it's dated badly. Great last lines, though. And then Terry Miles says, well done, Mary and Debbie.
Oh, thank you, Terry.
Which then takes me on to Andrew Cartmell's thoughts on what is known as the Cartmell Master Plan. Yeah. So, yeah, and now we can talk about the master plan.
Well, I have a little gag about that. I always say the Cartmell master plan was to get the scripts in on time. But obviously it has a wider meaning than that. I had no idea that there was anything called the Cartmell master plan until I went to a convention in L.A. And it was Paul Cornell, in fact, who said, have you ever heard the term Cartmell master plan? And I hadn't. But when people explained to me what it referred to, I thought, oh, well, I know what that is. I just never heard it called that. Nah. So it was, I very rapidly, when I was working on the show, understood what I felt the show needed, which was that to get back to the original spooky kind of doctor. Spooky doctor who you had to respect because you didn't really know what he was up to, what he was capable of. And that had been very much lost. The doctor had become sort of a kind of... smiling, nice guy who was at the periphery of the story. I felt that he had to be at the center of the story. He had to be, he had to command power, and he had to be mysterious. And so, with the help of a fantastic team of writers and the wonderful combination of Sylvan Sophie, Sylvester McCoy, and Sophie Aldred, I was in a uniquely good position to do that. And I set about doing that by talking to the writers about it, by deliberately trying to make the Doctor darker and more forceful, and I think we pulled it off. Certainly by the time we'd finished season 26, forgive me, that was a Freudian slip, we never got to season 27. By the time we finished season 26, I think we'd achieved that we'd done a reset and that the Doctor was in a very good place to go forward, but of course we didn't go forward.
No. But some of those stories have come out in Big Finish, haven't they? The potential stories, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm very proud of one called Animal. That's my favourite from that cluster. They're all good, but I think that one is particularly fine.
Yeah. And have you been involved in some of the stories that went out on Big Finish?
Well, yes, I wrote Animal.
Yeah. Well, obviously, I'm proud of that one, yes.
I wrote Crime of the Century. I wrote... you see, it's hard for me to remember the name sometimes because we didn't choose these titles.
No.
We had these titles rather imposed upon us. So I co-wrote Earth Aid with Ben... And I think, did I do another one? Anyway, and Mark Platt wrote one called Thin Ice, something like that. Anyway, it was very good. Yes. So I wrote a bunch of them, including one with Ben, and then Mark wrote one. So I was heavily involved in that.
Yeah.
And I believe the script editor was or producer was David Richardson.
Yeah.
Big Finish. And he was absolutely wonderful. He was a darling. And I'll tell you why. Because we decided that we were going to introduce a new companion. And we had a pretty cool idea for what that new companion was going to be when the show was canceled. But we had this idea for sort of a upper-class cat burglar. Mm-hmm. So if you've ever watched something like the Emma Peel Avengers, you'd have an idea of where we were coming from.
Yeah.
So we had this strong idea for a new companion. And when we did the Missing Adventures, or whatever they were called, for Big Finish, the notion was that do this thing, that we would have this new companion appear. But I was talking to David, I said, it's the new companion's wonderful, but it's such a shame that we're going to lose Sophie and Ace. And he said, well, why don't you just have both of them? No. That was really thinking outside the box. Yeah. And to this day, I'm very grateful to him. And I send him my best wishes.
So what do you think of the current era, the 13th Doctor era? Have you had a chance to watch it and digest any of it?
I think Jodie Whittaker is a tremendously good choice. And I'm familiar with her from her other stuff, including Broadchurch and an incredible film called Venus. But I've not seen any of the new films. I know that people think that's weird, but I just refer to them to my earlier comments that I once made, that it's a bit like when you're not working on the show anymore, the show is a bit like your ex-wife. Yes. You're happy that she's well and that she's, you know, she is happy, but you really don't want to inquire too closely into what's going on in her life. So I do tend to steer clear of the new show for that reason.
And I am very lucky to have on my shelf a copy of your book with signed stuff in it, which is really nice. Is that book still available for people?
That book is still available. We did a reprint of it. So first of all, the book's called Script Doctor. Yes. It's about my era working on the show, which means it's all about making the show. It's all focused on what it was like to make the show. And luckily for us, I kept diaries at the time. So it's full of wonderful detail. So anybody who's interested in that period of Doctor Who, or what it was like making television in Britain at that time, should read that book. And I'm not just being self-serving. If you don't want to buy the book, you can borrow a copy from your library, support your local library. But if you do want to buy a copy, we've just done a fresh small print run. I think it was 100 copies, and that's almost sold out. But if there's demand, we'll just do another print run.
Yeah.
So if you want to find a copy, it's Script Doctor by Andrew Cartmell, but you need to know one other thing. You need to know the following letters, M-I-W-K, because that's the name of the publisher. So if you Google, even if you just Google M-I-W-K, you'll probably get there. But if you throw in Andrew Cartmell and Script Doctor, you'll find how to buy the book. And we can arrange for it to be a signed copy. We can even arrange for it to be personalized to the person buying it. But you just need to get in touch with that, with M-I-W-K.
Fantastic. Thank you, Andrew.
Thank you for mentioning the book, Adam, because I wasn't going to. And it was really kind of you to include that. And
a few of us on the show have got copies of it, and we're all thrilled to have those copies or cherish them.
So I'm very proud of that book, because I think I did a good job of evoking that era. And if people are interested, they should go to that book. And as I say, they don't even have to buy it, but they should read that book. Thank you for mentioning it. It has slipped my mind.
Anyway, well, thank you very much for yet another appearance on the show. It's great.
No, it was a bit of a long and winding road to get us there, but we got there.
It's good fun, though.
No, thanks, thank you Andrew. Very much, and just keep me in the loop. I hope that those are useful. If you need any pickups or corrections, just get in touch.
Okay, thank you. Well, take care and enjoy your Saturday.
I will. Thank you very much, mate. All the best.
See you later. Bye-bye. Of course, it's Sunday, but
I didn't mean to walk over, Andrew. I didn't realise you hadn't finished, because you did that usual, oh, yeah, thank you, which you always say after you've played something. Mm. But I just looked on eBay, and it's like £101 for that book.
Yeah. Ooh. Unfortunately, Mawick, the publisher, is actually closing shop late in December. And according to their website at the moment, they have sold out of the book.
Oh.
Yeah.
I looked on Amazon, but I can't seem to see a copy there.
So what you're saying is I can sell my copy of it for 100 quid. That only costs good.
I bought mine directly from Andrew at a convention.
Well, I thought you might have done, Kirby.
Yeah.
He's going to do that still.
Do you know what? I might just message him then. I've got one of his vinyl detectives that he signed for me as well. So, yeah, I'll do that.
Oh, those are good.
They're brilliant, aren't they?
Terry Marr says, well done. I've done that one. Anity Butcher said, well done, narrators. Mary deserves a drink. So I think he officially owes you a drink, Mary.
Right. I'll take you up on that.
And then he makes it horrible by saying, Adam is a great ventriloquist. ventriloquist, when he talks to Andrew Cartmell. Well, thank you for pointing that out. This is a recording, for goodness sake. Right, well, that means I can close that little folder down containing Andrew's blurb. So now we can move on to news. Well, unless anyone's was trying to get a word in during Andrew's audio.
I was just going to mention real quick, the Big Finish audience he's referring to are called the Lost Stories, not the Missing Stories. They are still available from the Big Finish website, and I will hopefully be writing an article about them for the Sea Lion Press blog coming out in about a month's time.
Okay, right, so we're going to move on to thank you.
Leave it to Matthew to correct Andrew.
Yes, well, that doesn't surprise me.
I've done it before.
That's because Matthew's celebrity status is moving above Andrew's. As we speak.
He's on his way
out. I don't think that's quite true.
His pay grade is increasing too.
Yeah.
That's anyway. What she said.
Right, Doctor Who news. Now,
let me remind Adam and Kirby and I think Matthew and Debbie that you have all those.
Thank you, Mary. Well, we might dabble here and there in a couple of years' time, if indeed I can still do it in a couple of years' time. Right then, so
that's
Doctor
what she
Who,
said.
Doctor Who news. A few moments ago, the trailer for the Christmas special. Stop coughing over my blimmin' blurb. I'm going to get told off for shouting. Yes, the trailer for the Christmas special. Here it is.
How many people in the universe get to meet the Doctor? Let alone travel with her. Being with the Doctor, you don't get to choose when it stops. Whether you leave her or she leaves you.
The Doc would really want us to keep an eye on the planet, right?
But how is that possible?
If we don't help, the human race is going down.
You with us? As of now, you will see new defense drones at work.
These machines are going to change the world.
Yo, remember us?
I'm Captain Jack Harkness,
and I'm immortal.
Are you feeling insecure? Because you seem to need a lot of praise.
Do I?
Prepare for maximum extermination.
Not you guys.
No, move!
Now, Jack!
Stay strong. People waiting for you.
Doctor Who, Revolution of the Daleks, New Year's Day.
Mac, yeah, a visual trailer works really good on audio.
Doctor Who YouTube channel.
Yeah.
I haven't seen that yet, so...
Tell anything from that.
It's all been on here.
It's all been on, yes. So that's quite exciting. Looking forward to that one. There's the Collection Season 8. BBC Studios have announced the next installment of Doctor Who, the Collection range, will be the third Doctor Season 8. Is that on Blu-ray? I don't want to mention that word.
Yes, it will be on Blu-ray.
So that's quite an exciting series of Doctor Who. That is unofficial Doctor Who annual 1989. Too far back. The unofficial Doctor Who annual 1989 has been released by Terraquinus Distributors.
Terraquinus.
Oh, is it Terraquinus? Is it
Terraquinus?
Oh, whatever. The annual is 209 pages long, featuring stories and illustrations. Produced by fans, as well as contributions from well-known names such as Alastair Pearson. I'm not going to mention the rest. of course, there's a little thing about Captain Jack returning for Christmas. That was exciting when we found that out, wasn't it? And just what we hoped for.
Yeah. Nice bit of good news. Yeah.
I know JB is exceptionally excited. He's been posting stuff left, right, and centre on Facebook, at least. Bless him. Right, so that is Doctor Who news. There's really nothing else coming through, but we have one brand new story in between now and when they finish filming and producing the next one, which they're currently doing. So God knows when that'll be, but I think it's very likely to be 2022 or even Christmas next year, perhaps.
Yeah, they're aiming apparently for autumn 2021 for a broadcast of Series 13.
Well, if that's the case, Matthew, you get one of these. Okay. If it doesn't happen, you'll get one of these. Okay.
Wouldn't be the first time, wouldn't be the last.
Well.
Right then, so that's Doctor Who news. I'm sure there was something else. Oh, yeah, we did mention about Lavazzi's little blog competition. Don't know if anybody entered it.
I did.
There's also...
I did.
Pardon? You did, yeah?
Yeah.
Deb, well, I entered the Children and Need Doctor Who competition. I didn't win. So if anybody did win, it'd be nice to hear from you and send some stuff over. Oh, yeah, to whoone.co.uk.
Is that whoone.co.uk?
I'm paraphrasing this, Locke, because I'm going to make it very quick. They sell biggest range of Doctor Who Target novels you can get at the moment in brand new format, along with lots of other stuff. So it's Christmas is coming. It's not long to go now. So get to whoone.co.uk and buy your Doctor Who.
Is that whoone.co.uk?
Fan relatives, something or other. And, of course, iwheroes.co.uk. If you're in the UK, they ship to the UK. And also, sign up to their Facebook page, because Rob regularly does videos of package openings for the stuff they get in stock. It's really quite interesting. You wouldn't believe it would be. They are. And they also do draws. If you buy anything in store, like a Funko Pop, you get a raffle ticket, and then they do a draw every month for free pops. And Isabella has been trying to get some Umbrella Academy pops that are, these aren't the regular ones, these are the rare ones, which aren't in her collection, because they're quite expensive when you want to buy them online. And so we've been entering this draw by just buying a Funko Pop, and number 9 came up this week, and she's got herself a number 5. Number 5 is a character in Umbrella Academy. Number 9.
You said
was
number
9.
Number 9.
Debbie.
Number
9.
Debbie.
Number 9.
Debbie.
Number 5 is alive.
Debbie. Debbie, if I say it too many more times, my wife will come downstairs. Pardon?
They're remaking that, Johnny 5 is
alive.
Are they?
Debbie.
Yeah, short circuit.
Short circuit.
Debbie. Yeah. I don't want to say it too many times.
You're
getting
like a proper Indian guy.
Debbie. Debbie,
yes,
I said, I don't want to say it too many times. Otherwise, she'll come downstairs and tell me off. Can you tell Kirby off for being naughty?
Why?
That was terrible.
How was I naughty?
I can't remember, but because it was such a long time ago,
I was obviously disappointed.
I was saying Debbie for about 15 minutes.
On Adam's lovely podcast.
Pardon? I didn't hear what she said. Right then,
master,
what else have we got?
Master.
What?
I finally found. I've been spending the last several minutes trying to find what I was talking about earlier. Back in December of 2014, we all came up with our list of our top 3 stories for each doctor.
Did I do that, Kirby?
I don't know, because it's just this is just my list for myself. Of what I was going to say on the podcast.
Well,
so I will try to find.
My God, he has a list for himself.
No, I sent myself. No, actually, this is an email to Master on December 8th, 2014. But I've got my top 3 stories for each doctor.
And yes, I suppose we should. We should do that when we get to the end of things, I suppose, which is still a long way off because we've got all of New Who to do yet. Robert Vince Jr. says, Star Trek Discovery talking about Spock's legacy. Right then, so we can talk about now very briefly about other stuff I've been watching this week. I haven't watched the most recent episode of Mandalorian yet because I've been waiting. I wanted to get the big TV up to get it in its full glory, so I'm looking forward to seeing that.
Yeah, I haven't seen it yet either.
Love the Mandalorian.
The most recent episode of Star Trek Discovery, as mentioned by Robert Vance Jr., is quite nostalgic for Star Trek fans.
Yes,
it's and all, the whole series is lovely anyway. It's a really, really good series, and great characterizations by all and sundry. It's wonderful. Really is wonderful. And I'm looking forward to the spin-off series where we get Captain Pike and the Enterprise. Yeah. But what else have we been watching this week? Oh, The Crown. It went past so quickly. Watched it too quickly.
Is it finished?
Yeah, well, yes, they released it the whole lot together in one lump sum.
Yeah, binge that.
Yeah, we didn't watch
it. I hear that it's been very unpopular.
Oh, no, that's paper talk, Mary.
People lashing out at the royal family.
No, yeah, that's paper talk.
Yeah, Kensington Palace cancelled their Twitter account and Instagram account because of the backlash to Camilla and Charles.
Yeah. Well, I don't know, but I don't think Camilla deserves
a
backlash.
So.
I think it paints Camilla in a better light. No, I don't think it does. I think it shows that Charles was deeply in love with her and wasn't allowed to express that until now. Obviously, well, he's been married to her for quite a long time. But but what they've asked apparently is that Netflix put a pointer on it, says that it's a fictional
dramatized
series based on real
dramatized
events.
In other words,
it's not. Most things based on real events aren't.
Is it a science fiction fantasy TV program?
Well, no, they made Prince Philip really clever in some of the
Were you talking about the moon stuff?
Some of the plummy lines, and you're there going, wow, Prince Philip.
The moon landing bits. Mm. No, but it's
not
a good show.
Hey.
What a performance, though. But would you stop dying on the show? I'm trying to blim do a podcast here.
Robert, use your mute button.
Anyway, the great performance by Gillian Anderson as Margaret Thatcher. Blimmin' amazing, to be fair. Alan T. Butcher said The Crown is a closely studied exploration of the Thatcher era. It's still a great. I know they've.
I think that's a bit of a stretch, Alan.
It was always going to upset the royal family the closer we got to the present day, isn't it? Yeah. Let's face it. But I don't think it upsets as much as they're reporting it in the papers.
I think that's why I've avoided the season so far of The Crown, mm-hmm. because it's the part I was alive for.
Hmm.
And it's kind of the bit I don't really necessarily want to know the inside workings of or whatever their dramatization is, because I don't want to see those people like that, because I grew up loving Charles and Diana and I realized that was whatever, but
yeah
it's difficult, and at some point when I'm ready I'm going to start watching it again, but it's just like I don't know if I'm ready for what. Yeah,
it's okay. I mean, I love Charles and Diana. I particularly love Diana. I mean, I still one of my cherished moments of my life was meeting her. It didn't tarnish it. Seeing this version of events,
something to be proud of.
I'm very proud of it. Yeah.
I'm saying, Debbie.
Well,
I've met Camilla.
Have you? Oh, excellent. I just remember that I had such a clear memory of meeting Diana and meeting, holding her hand, her gloved hand, and her looking into my eyes and saying, how do you do? I think it was pretty almost word for word. But looking into her eyes and having that connection for a split second, and her yellow suit and her yellow hat and her being so lovely. A lot of memories sort of fade, but that one stays really strong in my mind. I just wish I had a decent photograph of me with her at the time, which someone had, because I know the photographer who took the pictures of that walk along, the last frame of the film he had was me leaning on the sort of barrier looking up towards Diana as she was shaking hands with other people. But I'm in the picture and it is clearly me, but when I've posted that picture, other people as well, it's not you, hair's too dark, and some other ridiculous excuse. Well, it was dark because of the badly developed photograph, and is me because it's my earring and my jacket. I didn't remember anybody on the day that happened to be having the same ridiculously shaped ears as me, wearing an earring in my left ear. Anyway, I know it's me.
I have a question for Debbie. You said you met Camilla. Mm-hmm. Did she talk? Did you listen to her?
She spoke very briefly because she was a bit late for launching one of our red jets, and she came along and Isla and I were stood there, and she stopped to say hello and how are you doing, and it's a bit hot, isn't it? And I just thought she was quite personable, because we'd all had drinks brought out to us by Red Funnel because it was so hot and they'd kept us waiting for so long with no shade. We were all pretty much dying, and there's Isla with this beautiful mass of long hair just stood there wilting.
The reason I ask is Nick Briggs, just in this last Chicago TARDIS thing, was talking about how Prince Charles and Camilla visited the studio one day. And, of course, Charles wanted to play around, you know, with the ring modulator and all that.
Oh, yeah, I saw that, yeah.
And he said that, he said that the disconcerting thing was that when they stood side by side and were talking with him, that Charles was very easy to understand, but every time Camilla would talk, it would be so proper. So, he had no idea what she was saying to him.
Did that so well, Mary.
Yeah. Yeah, so he kind of stared at her for a minute, and he hoped that Charles, you know, would give him a clue.
Well, and then considering I'm actually quite plummy, it was fine.
Yeah.
I just wonder if she is that way, you know, if she was that way with you.
She does have quite a thick plum going on, but yes, it is.
Yeah.
I do too, so, you know.
Well, Alan T. Butcher says Kirsty is going to start watching when she's no longer alive. I presume that's in relation to Diana. and Bonnie Francis Himmelblo.
When all the characters are dead.
Characters?
Do you want me to do that one again?
Probably when I'm dead.
Oh, well, that might be difficult watching stuff unless you're a ghost.
Well, they are characters, aren't they, really?
Bonnie Francis Himmelblau, sorry if I've said that wrong, says, I attended a virtual convention the last few days. It can be viewed on YouTube and Facebook by typing in Chicago TARDIS 2020.
Yes.
Never heard of it.
No, I've never heard of
TARDIS.
It. Mm. What an interesting name. I wonder what TARDIS stands for.
Shut up, Kirby. Yeah.
Dimension in space.
Okay, right. Next week we're going to be looking at dimensions in time. Apparently, somebody posted.
Or is that dimension in time?
Oh, whatever. Apparently, there's a. Is it you, Kirsty, who posted the longer version of it on the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast Facebook group?
No.
I posted all three versions of it.
Oh, was it you, Matthew? I do apologise, Matthew. I do apologize.
I'll give that post a bump once we get done.
Yeah, because I'll probably try and watch the longest version. You say they're on YouTube?
Yeah, but it's never been officially commercially released because it was done the funkiness of doing it for children in need and nobody getting paid for it. So people have uploaded it onto YouTube for better or worse.
I should attempt to watch it.
They've got the 3D version, don't they?
One of them has some very interesting outtakes and has like the scene with the Daleks that was cut out of it.
Are we going for the one that's 21 minutes long?
I don't know.
I think that's the longest version.
Okay, we'll go for that one then.
That one's been re-edited to have different... It takes out the introduction with John Pertwee and the house party guy.
Noel Edmonds.
Yeah.
House party guy. We all knew him.
Yeah, okay. Well, we'll watch the 21-minute version then. Will you stop dying on the podcast, Robert?
In this country,
for goodness sake.
When house party to me means Art Linkletter back when I was a kid.
Does it?
No, to us it means Noel Edmonds, Mr. Blobby, and all sorts
back
of weird.
Back in the 1920s.
Art,
how old
are you, Kirby?
Yeah, so that's next week then. Dimensions in Time. I wonder how long it'll take Kirby to get through this, but it is quite nice to see. Or a lot of people we've been reviewing over the last few years of doing the journey.
It's going to be a pretty short podcast.
Not with you on. Come on, Kirby. Come on, admit it.
Yeah, I could
take us at least an hour to get through the episode.
We'll see what happens.
I could say absolutely nothing.
Well, we could reminisce about what we've done over the last
Kirby,
few years.
Kirby, I suppose if you decided you were going to sulk on the show, yes, you would indeed say nothing. But that's not what you're hired to do.
I don't think he can say nothing.
Yeah, we've been
it's
doing
this. It's going to take us 20 minutes to discuss what we're going to discuss.
We've been doing this since January 5th, 2015, going through.
This has been a long time.
Longer for me, because I'm the only one who's done every single episode. Robert Venge Jr. says it will be nice seeing Rani again.
I only missed one.
Did you? Yeah. You sure it was only one?
I missed the Wheel in Space
for the last year.
Okay. Right then. So that's next time then. So
I still haven't watched it, which means I still haven't watched all of Doctor Who.
Do it now. Right now.
Goodness. Right. This, if anybody now. Has anything else to say before I go and watch Murder on CCTV, and that might end up being me murdering Kirby. Mind you, I'll have a long way to travel to do that.
Yeah. Yes, I want to step in and say, for anyone who may have missed it at the beginning, I want to recommend that anyone who can turn to the Chicago TARDIS 2020 things on YouTube, I especially recommend you go to the one where our Matthew is featured in talking about Time Lord Victorious. Because he talks about the whole arc and what's out there and how wonderful it has the potential of being. So
can you post that link on the 20megabyte.2 podcast Facebook group, which you can join?
I will post it as soon as we're done recording.
Thank you.
Now, would that be Arc of Infinity or Arc in Space?
I'm glad that this is not a visual podcast because you can't see what I'm doing on the screen right now.
Robert Lenz Jr. says, in Dimensions in Time. So to put the two statements together, it will be nice seeing the Rani again in Dimensions in Time. It will indeed. It will be nice seeing all of them again, to be fair. The story may be a load of pants.
I need to see if I can find my 3D glasses for that.
It's a bit of a visual. It's a visual thing for the fans.
Which color do you need, Kirby?
No, it's not a color thing. You need a slight... One eye, I forget which one, needs to be almost opaque, but you can see through it partially, and that makes the effect work.
Yeah, it depends which way they're walking or the camera's turning. So you, basically, one eye's got to see something slightly darker than the other, and that creates a 3D effect, because one image gets a little bit longer to get to the brain. So therefore, you get your 3D. It's actually quite effective.
I can't see 3D, so...
Oh, okay. Robert Vance Jr. says, bye until next week, which is rather clever, because it's exactly what I'm going to say. Thank you for watching, taking part, and providing us with feedback and stuff. Keep doing it, Sue. And see you next time. Bye!
Goodbye, fancy pants.
So long, and thanks for all the fish.
The 20MB Doctor Who podcast is an APV services production sponsored by whoone.co.uk and lavazzi.co.uk. We are a proud member of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance. Doctor Who is a trademark of the BBC. No copyright infringement intended.